Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening. It is June 14th, 2007. And a couple of mentions of radio shows where I've been guest recently. I was a guest this past Sunday on the Zeft Report with Zeft Daniels. And we talked about a few topics I want to mention again tonight. For example, we talked about the Queen again, or the Queenie, or as I said with tongue-in-cheek, the elderly lady who lives in England who calls herself the Queen. I personally don't believe in queens or royalty any more than I believe in the man in the moon. And a couple weeks ago I talked about the wealth that these entities are sitting on, much of it stolen from around the world, specifically from Latin America, what we call Latin America, but the Mesoamerican cultures that were raped and pillaged when the New World was discovered and opened up, so to speak. So that was, we talked about her going to NASA, but also, he brought up the point that a couple years ago, a friend of mine and also another talk show host, John Moore, who I will be guest on John's show this coming Sunday, that will be at 5 p.m. Central Time. John Moore, I'll be a guest, I believe, for half an hour this coming Sunday. John sent me a letter a number of years ago. And Zeph brought this up because he had seen it too. The letter contained a map and also some basically restructuring information stating that by about 2007 to 2008 time frame, that the federal government, all agencies, departments, including the military, which included the Navy more specifically, would have moved inland, and the Navy didn't move inland. They just restructured their bases, and many of the bases that they currently held were closed down. The military, specifically the Air Force and the Army, would move underground, and recently, the FBI moved to Colorado, the IRS has moved to Utah, and the point being that John Moore had talked about this a couple years ago, and as I said in a private communication, wrote me a letter including a map showing inland intrusions of the ocean, and there was something going on. These were estimates being made by either geologists or people from the USGS or Department of Interior from an association with the military, the Pentagon, and the CIA, etc., saying that all federal agencies would be moved, and oddly enough, that's been accomplished with great haste recently. And so I'm just reiterating this. This is not my original discovery. I want to credit John Moore. And then, of course, this has been brought up on many radio shows recently, is my understanding. The people that track other radio shows for me have been reporting back. And so this information is being spread far and wide that the culmination of the movement of federal agencies, departments, the military, etc., all has been completed with great haste. So then you ask the question, what does this really mean? What is this all about? What on earth is all the movement about? Why is the Queen coming and visiting NASA? And, of course, NASA for many years has been building cave cities, and a lot of people will say, well, how do you know that? Well, just inside information, plus a couple of years ago, this was public, a plane flew in from Russia, and it had, this was the biggest airplane in the world. It was needed to haul in the drill bit for the underground tunneling device. It was being flown, it flew over the pole, it landed at Minneapolis International Airport for a stopover and fueling, and then it flew on to Houston to be delivered to NASA. Interesting that NASA, our space agency, has been busy digging tunnels. So at any rate, the entire movement of all of this going on indicates that there's a lot of preparation being made to go underground into safe keeping, so to speak, of a lot of these agencies. And I've always said that, in my opinion, if something major is going to happen, a deep cave tunnel system is the last place you want to be, because they will fracture, they will break, and basically provide a very expensive funeral, tomb, if you would, for the people staying in those locations, even though they're probably well provisioned. You don't want to be too far in the ground. Although, if the winds start up, the very severe winds, then you may have a situation where you would want to be underground. But I wouldn't want to be very far underground. So at any rate, I'm just bringing this up because we did mention this on the show this week with Zeph Daniels, and I'm sure John Moore and I will be talking a little bit more about this on Sunday on his show. So I specifically don't have any information regarding objects coming into the solar system, but I'm going to make a little bit of movement to try and do some examination of that southern portion of the sky that's only visible at this time of year. But on my previous trips, I learned that the haze layer that's down there, especially due to the ocean, the increase in the amount of temperature, or the increase in the amount of heat in the system, the Earth system, there's a good deal of haze in the Earth's atmosphere that wasn't there before. So the end result is viewing. I just noticed something here in the studio, something very odd. If I sounded like I was in some kind of an echo chamber, and the sound level is changing here, I did not have the headset that I'm using plugged into the system, so I was actually on a remote speaker, and the sound was being picked up for the show on that. So now I've corrected that. I've plugged in the headset into the system here, and so if I sounded as if I were in some kind of an echo chamber for the first part of the show, or the sound was a little different, I apologize. We're now online, as we should be. But interestingly enough, the show did go on. I just mentioned that I'll be on John Moore's show on Sunday, and regarding the federal agencies, so we'll keep you posted on that. As I said, many other talk show hosts are covering that topic, but I just wanted to briefly mention it here in case you had not heard about that. The $150 offer that I had on my webpage is about to ship, and we had some delays at the very last minute on one of the production items, and we had to make a correction in one of the plates for one of the DVDs at the very last minute. And so these kind of things happen, and but perfection has its place, and so we had to, as I say, make a correction And that is has been accomplished, so now we're back in track, and those will be shipping as this show goes on the air. And so a bit of delay, unfortunately, in getting that package out to the people. This is the order number 444, or the what I called on the web page the reprint special, where you would get two complete sets of books and DVDs. And that finally culminating and getting in the process of being shipped here. So I appreciate everybody's patience. This has been a seriously monumental effort, re-editing all of my books, having all of them reprinted, all of my videos, plus two more additional ones that I had in archives that people had not seen yet, being added to the list and being remastered onto DVDs, plus the first of the 20 DVD lecture series being completed, 2 hours and 19 minutes. And future editions of that will have more animation and that type of effects. But the first one will be rather simple, but it lays the groundwork for the future DVD lectures. And it allows me to a new medium to advance new material on a detailed platform, just as I would if I were standing in front of a lecture room at a university with a large audience sitting out there, a group of students. So anyway, on to the next topic, but those are shipping now, and that offer will go away, and the book pricing will revert back to normal. I want to comment on last week's radio show. I did get some varying comments because the topic of general relativity can get a little bit thick and heavy, but I want to summarize what the lecture was about and then the conclusion. A twist on general relativity that you probably have not been aware of. But anyway, the end result was that general relativity has to go away. Now, there's special relativity. General relativity is a modification of special relativity. Special relativity has to do with reference frames, light moving at a certain velocity relative to these reference frames, and experiments that were performed back at the beginning of the 1900s. And the fact that light moves at the same speed no matter what reference frame you're in. General relativity deals with gravitational fields and electromagnetic radiation. And those early assumptions and experiments were interesting, but they had some fatal flaws that weren't apparent at the time. You can't really find flaws in what the people did at the time, given the perspective of what they had at the time. But in hindsight, of course, it's always 20/20. And from the view now, and of course, the papers I wrote in the late 1970s dealing with the electrical nature of the solar system, of the universe, etc., I called on general relativity, and I said it's simply not true, and I pointed out that Einstein himself questioned general relativity. But the interesting twist, what I gave last week was the seven fatal flaws of general relativity, and numerous authors, scientific authors, have come at general relativity and the flaws from various points of view. But the point that I was making last week, the final point, was that you can't just get rid of general relativity because a lot of data rests on the interpretation of general relativity. You have to replace it with something. And that's why I talked about the electrical nature of the universe and how that, in fact, would replace general relativity. The first DVD lecture in the series, which will be available by itself also,
in the near future on the web page and also by mail order, talks about the restructuring of physics, and that is in fact the topic of the first lecture DVD in the series, the 20 DVD lecture series, is the restructuring of physics based on the electrical nature of the cosmos. And in that, general relativity goes away, and I show how a couple quick assumptions show that how to explain the basic structure of physics and make things make sense again. So anyway, I just wanted to summarize what the concept, the basic concept from last week, what the summary, what the conclusion was, that general relativity has to go away, but you have to replace it with something. And so on to the next topic. Just a quick mention, and I talk about water and the necessity of water and the necessity of you having your own source of clean, fresh water. Now, something happened over the past few weeks, and I got the feedback from many people. There was an email being passed around, and an article, the title of that article was Water as a Weapon. And oddly enough, people were receiving emails supposedly from me with a link to this article. And first of all, I do not send out emails or mass emails on any kind of topics. The only place I ever post is on my own webpage. And so people actually told me that they were receiving an email from me. I did not send that email. And that's why early on I decided that I would not have e-groups or emailings or mass mailings, and there were some kind of clowns running around the internet pretending that they represented me, and so it became apparent that I would just post on my webpage only and not allow these spoofers, as they're called, to try and pretend like I was either emailing people or that there was somebody representing me, which, of course, there wasn't. So at any rate, I did not send out this article. The idea in the article was that, and I'm just repeating what the article said, I don't have any verification of this. I don't have any information that would confirm this. The article was talking about water supplies being poisoned and on a basis where there was an infrastructure where individual houses could be poisoned, whereas the neighboring houses would be left unaffected. So at any rate, I did not send out that article. I don't know if you did see that article. I don't have any information to say if it's true or not true. It certainly sounds like something the crazy government would do and spend your tax dollars doing something ridiculous like that. But I don't have any way of confirming it or denying it, so just wanted to include that. But what I always talk about is the reality that many communities that have had their water go bad, nobody knows about it. I just noticed in the water system of our friends, they were watering their lawn, and some of the water was spraying on the house, and it actually caused the side of the house to change colors. Now, if you can imagine that, pretty strange conditions where the water coming from the city actually had something in it where it caused the house to start changing colors. So, once again, you need your own source of fresh, clean water, and would I insist? In fact, I would actually make the following statement. If you do not have your own gravity feed water filter, that is a freestanding water filter, this is not one connected into your water line, and if you have one of those, I personally don't like those because if the filter cracks or develops a small crack, then all your water is going to go through that little crack and it's not going to filter anything at all. and you're not even going to know it. So a gravity feed water filter does not have that potential problem. So what I recommend is the Berkey water filter. It's the best one I have seen. The Black Berkey filter elements are excellent, and I actually have three water filters. A lot of people are, I noticed this, they buy two, one for their house, one for the cabin, one for camping, or one for their travel bag, or whatever you want to call it. So they always have their own clean, fresh water. So I'm finding this more and more. People are actually ordering two, one for their house on the kitchen sink, and one for some other purpose. Maybe they're in construction and they want it on site where they have, you just don't know what kind of water you're getting, and you then have clean, fresh water no matter where you are. So just briefly mentioning that, of course, available on my webpage. Mail order, they're $315. You get the Black Berkey filters, four of them, the two that come with the unit plus two spares, for a total of four Black Berkey filter elements. The tanks for the filter, you pour the water in the top, clean water comes out the bottom. And the free Kato 9 WRX 911 emergency shortwave radio that you can listen to this show and many other shortwave shows on that small emergency radio, and free shipping for $315. That is an excellent deal. And if, like I say, if you don't have your own source of fresh water, in my opinion, in these days, you are crazy. I don't know how else to put it, but I would not drink what comes out of the tap. I would not, especially when I travel, I would certainly have my own source of fresh water, and even on the at home on the kitchen sink, I wouldn't drink what comes out of the faucet. I wouldn't trust it. So at any rate, I want to go into a topic now. I want to talk about making terms, let's say, goofy. Let's muddying them up. And now this is a disinformation tactic that you take a topic, you take a, something you want to divert the public's attention or turn the public against it. I guess that's the best way to talk about it. So I want to bring up some terms where the topic has been muddied up. And this is something disinformation crews are actually paid to do. For example, there are professional muddying disinformation crews out there trying to damage my good name and say all kinds of ridiculous things about me on the internet. But most people can see through that, of course. But now I'm going to take some terms and just show you how these terms have been turned against the public, or turned that concept in the public eye has been twisted so that the public perception is one of a negative viewpoint. And of course, the first term that comes to mind is the word alien. That is a term that really has many connotations, but of course, in the world that most of us think, we're talking about creatures not of this planet. And now, back in the 50s, there was an effort amongst astronomers to make it sound like anybody who considered that there might be intelligent life someplace else in the universe, that those people are crazy, and they are even crazier to imagine that those aliens could come here to planet Earth. So the entire topic of aliens was twisted and turned, and anybody that talked about aliens was marked a kook or an outsider or unscientific. And of course, any astronomer knew that if he wanted funding or wanted his job next year, he better not talk about aliens, or he better not talk to anybody who thought they had something to do with aliens. And then you get the disinformation campaign spread all over radio stations and on the internet of people who claim to talk to aliens, and then comes in the term Planet X. Now, the term Planet X is an ancient astronomical term. It goes back to the Middle Ages. It's actually an astronomical term used by the astronomical community. And what it really means, Planet X, what it really means is a planetary object or large solar system object or something from outside of the solar system that simply has not been named yet. Thus, the term Planet X. And so once it's named, then it would no longer be called Planet X. But now you have the crazy people who claim to talk to aliens, which is already a crazy topic because it's been muddied up by the disinformation crew, talking about Planet X. So they're trying to combine crazy topics and move this perception into the public view. Now I want to bring up another term that's going the way of disinformation. And now, understand that whenever they muddy up a term, there's always a front person, some kind of a crazy person. And you could look at, say back in the Cold War, that was done regularly where they'd take a term. Remember the commie pinkos? Those were college students that opposed the political view that commies were not bad. And so the commie pinko, those terms, the way they find certain terms to make it sound, negative to the general populace, when in fact, whether communists were good or bad wasn't the point. The point was that there were people out there with an agenda to take these terms and make them crazy so that anybody who talked about them in even the slightest positive sense would be termed a kook. Okay, so now we've talked about aliens and Planet X. How about conspiracy theories? That's another term designated, and this was brought up through a think tank back in the 60s, I believe, where it first started. Anything that didn't agree with the standard government party line would be called a conspiracy theory. John Kennedy being assassinated. If you didn't agree with the Warren Report, you were a conspiracy theorist. If you disagreed with, if you did not agree with the statement that NASA went to the moon, you were a conspiracy theorist. You see how they label things. And now the point of mentioning these, and I could go on and on, showing how certain terms have been muddied up. And in each case, they would take an example and they usually find some looney tune out there that, and they stroke their ego, they kind of put them up on a pedestal and make them think that they're important, and then they put them out in the public eye, and the public perception of these people is right on. They are nuts, they're goofy, and they push that certain term, whether it's alien or Planet X or conspiracy theory or whatever, but you got your goofy guy out there promoting it, thinking that he's just doing a good job and that he's real important. The latest term to be muddied up is electric universe. We've got some Looney Tunes imposters running around pretending that they're scientists, and this, once again, they take the goofy people, put them out there, promote them, and then muddy up a term. Now, last week's lecture, I talked about general relativity and the importance of replacing it with sound theories that are based on the electrical nature of the solar system. So if you were one of the disinformation crew specialists, electric universe, by the way, is a term that I coined and put in my early papers in the 1970s, in the late 1970s, and the point is that it is a very descriptive term. Something like Planet X, a very short term, it has a meaning which the public remembers, it's a term that they're going to remember, but if they want to muddy up a topic, then they will take that term, put in their Looney Tune, and put it out in flashing neon lights for the public to see, and of course the public perception is then going to be one of a crazy topic. Let me review those. Aliens, Planet X, conspiracy theory, and now electric universe. So all brought to you and supported by your friendly local disinformation crew, your taxes, your tax dollars at work. Okay, now I want to go back to the topic of the federal agencies all moving inland. And I talked, I believe, last week or the week before about the Cheyenne Mountain facility, what used to be SAC headquarters in the Colorado Springs area, now being converted. This is based on a general accounting office financial statement. That cave system back in the mountains outside of Colorado Springs now being converted to, you have to understand, listen to what this is going to be converted, because it was left, it was abandoned by the SAC, the Strategic Air Command. It's going to be used for a population migration, mass migration, federal headquarters. What is that telling you? That someone in the federal government is setting up an office to control mass migrations of the American population from the cities, obviously, and where are they going to move? Now, we've already seen this in the United States. It's been very subtle, very well covered up by the press. It was called Hurricane Katrina. It was a mass movement of the population of an entire urban area, and the entire population of America, I didn't buy it. I knew what was going on. It was ethnic cleansing, United States style. You bring in a storm, manipulated, devastate an area, force the people to move out using Homeland Security, move them all over the country, distribute them elsewhere, and then go in and bulldoze the streets so nobody can even recognize anything that existed there before. And you turn it over to the friends of the people in power so they can build nice homes. And then you rebuild the levee system and with federal funding, and all of a sudden you have some very wealthy people in one of the premier locations in the entire world, called New Orleans. Isn't that interesting? All happened very slick. And so the point is, we've already seen mass migrations done in a very subtle manner. Possibly the next mass migrations will not be so subtle. What's going to cause them? Why are the federal agencies moving inland? And this brings up the point, how quickly can an object move into the solar system and catch us unaware? What would it look like? And how long would it actually take to get here? How long would it take to have an effect on Earth? And the answer is, it could be here within a very short period of time. Now, once again, I'm not saying that something is coming. I do not personally have any information that would say there's an object heading into the solar system right now. We've been expecting this for a long time because of the political movements because of agencies building cave cities, because the Queen is now visiting NASA, on and on. So the indicators are all there. The question is, why is all of the importance being placed on moving these federal agencies now, post-haste, into the central part of the country? Why is there an Office of Mass Immigration and Migration being installed in a very secure cave region in the mountains around Colorado Springs? What are they expecting, and what do they know that we don't know? What is the Hubble Space Telescope doing this week? Is it watching something coming into the solar system and something that could affect us? How bad could it be? Actually, I've talked to some friends about this, but I want to make it very clear that an object could be upon us within a very short amount of time from the time the public first sees it or gets wind of this. And once again, I'll go back to what we were talking about Sunday on the ZEP report, and this is a topic I've brought up many times. Supposedly the reason that the government does not tell the populace about impending disasters, especially from outer space, the reason the government claims that it doesn't tell you is because you would stop making your house payment and insurance payment. You would stop making your phone payment. But what they say is there would be mass hysteria. Well, if they don't tell you, and one day you look up and you see something in the sky, and all of a sudden you realize that, hey, something's coming down here, all of a sudden there's police on every street corner, but they're not anybody that speaks English, you're going to know that something major is about to happen. And at that point, what is the time frame? How bad could it be? Those are questions that I know everybody wants to know the answer to those questions, and it's very difficult to say. But the point is, these things can sneak up on us very quickly. Remember, Comet McNaught from last summer was discovered in August, but it sat up in the night sky right off of Jupiter, right to the right side of Jupiter in the night sky, right dead center, midnight, the middle of the night sky, all summer long, and nobody noticed it. The biggest comet in 40 years. And so this is what large objects coming into the solar system would look like. They would look like a large comet. That's why NASA has kept this dirty snowball scenario, this facade that comets are dirty snowballs, so that when something comes in and looks like a comet, they'll just say, oh, that's one of those little snowball things. But once you look up and you start seeing these objects flaring and with 15 tails and lashing out electrically at other planets, and you see this in the night sky, you're going to go, that ain't no little snowball. And all of the scientists at NASA will not be able to convince the population of the world otherwise. The point being, number one, they can sneak up on us in very short order. Number two, you can expect all of the government lies to come out at that time. You can probably expect required vaccinations and probably an entire litany of terrorist activities. The planned rabbit out of the hat type terrorist activity, once again created by your friendly local government or the friendly federal government. And at that point, pretty much the society as you know it will come apart. And the fact that the government did not pre-warn or advise the public previously will guarantee a much greater chaos than would happen if they told you. In many cases, if somebody tells you if something bad is going to happen and they tell you repeatedly, if you're prepared or not, at least you are mentally set up to look and understand and say, well, yeah, now it's happening. But if they don't tell you, and all of a sudden you realize it, the chaos that they supposedly were trying to prevent will be 10 times greater than it would have been if they had just told you the truth in the first place. So, once again, these can sneak up on us very quickly. Is something coming? I don't know. But all the political indicators seem to say that something is in the wind, or are they simply preparing some other devious mass terrorist event that'll affect large populations of this country? At any rate, preparing for these is always the same. You need your source of fresh water. That's number one. You need the red wheat berries. That's number two. Those are two things that'll get you through hard times like nothing else will. At least you will be in a survival mode where you can take care of yourself and you don't have to go out. The key number one thing that you do not want to do in emergency situation is become dependent on food and water and have to leave the place where you're existing with a close group of friends, relatives, or whatever. You don't want to have to leave to go out and get supplies, because that's when people generally get in trouble. So the point is, the self-sufficiency is very simple. You want to be living this form of self-sufficient lifestyle before any of this happens. At least on a model basis, you want to take a weekend or a week, if you possibly can, turn off all of the facilities at your residence, have your own fresh water, grow your own sprouts, the wheat germ, juice it, become independent to where you can function with providing your own fresh water and a basic minimal diet, and be able to do that for a 6-month period without going any place. If you can do that, you're going to be better off than 99.99% of the entire world population who is totally dependent on the local convenience store. Okay, so enough of that. And once again, I don't have any solid information that anything is impending, but when John Moore talked to me a couple years ago, he sent me that map. He said that this was all going to be in place. All the agencies, the government agencies, were going to move into the center of the country, and he actually had a map that had been drawn by government geologists showing the inundation of the oceans on certain parts of the United States. And there was no indication of what was going to cause this inundation, but they were getting ready for it. So other than that, I really don't know, but it has been confirmed that all of these agencies have moved into the central part of the country. With that in mind, I'm going to go on to just a quick commentary on the predictions. Every year I give predictions for weather and electrical alignments that could cause severe weather. So I'm going to quickly do that, and I have some notes in front of me, so you may hear some pages flipping as I go through some of my maps and charts here. But June, August, and a little bit of October, but also December of 2007, and I'm going to start to give some specific dates here. In June, now this relates to electrical alignments. And the reason electrical alignments are important is because this is when the long tail, electrical tails of the planets and moons align, and that causes excess discharge of the solar capacitor, where all the energy is stored in the solar system, and these discharges come back down to the sun, and large discharges can come out of the sun, solar flares, and this can affect our weather. So with that in mind, if you want more detailed information on that, of course, my weather book has a great deal of information on how exactly this works. But to talk about specifically the predictions for 2007, June 5th to the 21st, Mercury and Jupiter, Mercury being the closest planet to the Sun, and then Jupiter, the biggest planet in the solar system, are electrically aligned during that time frame, but especially June 17th, which is 2 days after the new moon. And also near the solstice, that is not an electrical condition, but oddly enough, there's a comet called 2P Encke, one of the most famous comets, will be just below the plane of the planets and somewhat in alignment with Jupiter, with Earth, I believe, on that occasion. So these conditions could cause solar flaring that, in fact, could affect Earth weather. Once again, the 17th of June being 2 days after the new moon, that is a trigger mechanism for electrical conditions in the solar system affecting our planet Earth. And that doesn't mean that on that day we're necessarily going to have a severe storm, but or a series of storms around the world. It just says that electrical conditions are right, and once again, you have to look at solar conditions that are going to be occurring during that time, and then also read all of the satellite transmissions that come back from the various solar and solar wind monitoring stations that are positioned in outer space. You put all that information together, and seeing the electrical alignments in advance gives one a measure of where to look for. And once again, that would be June 5th to the 21st, with emphasis on the 17th. Now looking at August, there is a maze of solar system electrical alignments, and once again with the new moon on the 12th. So I'm going to turn to my August charts here. And one might think that this almost sounds like astrology, but it is not. It is dealing with electrical alignments in the solar system that affect our weather. And so here's the whole series of electrical alignments. We've got Mercury and Saturn on the 18th aligned with the Sun. We've got Venus and Saturn on the 13th. This is of August. The 21st, we have Mercury and Venus aligned, Venus being on our side of the Sun, Mercury being on the far side of the Sun. And let's see, on the far side of Earth, Neptune on the 13th of August will be in alignment with Earth and the Sun. So basically we have, let me just summarize this because I kind of had a mouthful here, but Saturn, Mercury, Venus, and Earth, and then Neptune, which is out on the far side of the solar system. We have Saturn and Mercury on one side of the Sun. We have Venus, Earth, and Neptune on our side of the Sun during that time period. And then on the 12th, we have the new moon. So all of these conditions are suggesting that August could be a fairly active electrical month for the for storms. And of course, it normally is, but you add to this the August return current sheet. That's the electrical current that passes from the outer solar system back to the Sun. Add all of these factors together, and in fact, August through about the 12th to the 21st, we could see some severe weather activity during that time. And once again, it also depends on the activity in the solar activity that's occurring at that time. Okay, where is December? I'm going to pull up the December charts here. Okay, on looking at my notes again, December, cross solar system alignments are plentiful. And by the way, there's all of this hype about the year 2012, and what I want to mention about December is that every December we go through the same set of alignments, so there's nothing special about 2012 relative to the galaxy, as some people are claiming. There's simply nothing special about 2012 that we don't go through every year, that we're going through every year, this year, last year, the year before, the next year after that. Every year we have these same identical alignments, and the end of the world did not occur. So, at any rate, let's see, we've got Jupiter, Mercury, Mars, and I'm going to go to the chart here. Okay, Pluto, Jupiter, Mercury, all in one side of the Sun, aligning, and then on the far side we have Earth and Mars aligning electrically, and that's a very tight alignment. It's not the closest alignment of Mars with Earth, but it is still fairly tight on the 24th of December. So once again, on the far side from our vantage point at Earth during December, between the 19th and the 23rd, we have Pluto, Jupiter, and Mercury electrically aligned on the far side of the solar system. And on our side of the solar system, we'll have Mars and Earth. I'm looking for the... and also on the 24th, that's right, full moon, which is not as effective at triggering electrical conditions as the new moon, but it is still, once again, an electrical alignment that's added into that equation. So interestingly enough, December could be a fairly rich, active, stormy season compared to normal for 2007. Okay, so I just want to make one quick comment about how complex standard science has made the universe and out of reach of what the general public would normally be able to understand. One of the things I like to keep current in my radio show and in the books is that the universe is very understandable. The principles are very simple, and once you understand those principles, the universe is a very elegant, a very complex, but a very simple place. And the way we should be living in this universe is very different from what we are doing. We have almost unlimited free electrical power flowing by us every day, burning oil, nuclear fuel, and propane and coal are absolutely ridiculous when we have the amount of free energy flowing by. And there, once again, the concept of free energy has been another one of those terms that's been moved into kind of that crazy platform. And once again, they have their front people who are instrumental in promoting that craziness. And it's simply... there is free energy available, but there are people running around pretending you can build a box in your garage and you set it on your table and it just sucks out all of this energy from the universe and you can power your house. And to those people, I always say, if that's the case, then build one. But typically, you don't find that happening. But, of course, the Tesla tower was designed to extract energy from the atmosphere. I've got a picture of that on the front of my webpage. And the original design was to extract energy from the atmosphere, and it comes from the ionosphere. You have to basically drill a hole up through the atmosphere to tap into the ionospheric capacitor and charge. And I show how to do this in the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book, introduces that topic, and then it goes into detail in the weather book. There's some some detailed drawings showing how the Tesla tower, in fact, is used to extract energy from the ionosphere. And we could be living in an energy-free environment, yet, as I said, that's another one of those terms that has been muddied up by the disinformation crew, because it would certainly upset the financial apple cart to allow that level of free energy into the society and do away with oil, nuclear power, huge international industries that cannot be controlled. These are the industries that control government, over which wars are fought and phony money is created. Just a quick comment at the end of the show on my Calculate Primes book and DVD, which now is in the hands of course, thousands and thousands of people. But I want to mention that the book and DVD, once again, is the public release of this information. It's fairly limited. The design of that book was to give the populace an understanding of the prime number system as I've cracked the code for calculating directly the prime numbers, and the DVD is a lecture. It makes it a bit easier for the average person to follow the topic. But the point I want to make is this is not all. This is just a very small corner of the information I have on the prime numbers, on encryption and other topics, which are just too extensive to put out to the general public. And that comes in the form of other papers and writings and just personal work that I've done. So the point is that the Calculate Primes book and DVD is the public release. The private release came much earlier, before the release of the book to the public. But the point is that there's a good deal of other work that I performed relative to prime numbers and some of the related problems, and that material is not generally released to the public. It just I have to put a limit on the amount of information I put out. It's expensive to print the book and get the DVD and release it all and manage all of that. So I have to be very limited on the amount of information that I put out to the public. And I try and do it in a manner that is comprehensive, yet, and it gives a good overview, but all the details aren't there, and all the details of the other work that's associated with this are simply not available to the general public. So for many reasons, also a lot of that work is just my own personal work, my own personal research, and not, as I say, available to the general public. So with that in mind, I'm going to sign off this evening. I hope that you come back next week for another lecture, and I'll be dealing with more scientific topics as we move into the summer series of shows. And look at my webpage for the new outline of the books and DVDs, etc. It's going to look a little bit different. Once again, I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.